The past several months, we've been looking at miracles that Jesus performed, and you know, if we're expecting them, then we need to talk about them, right? So we've been expecting miracles, and we started in Matthew chapter 8, and we moved through Matthew and Mark and Luke, and we've been in John the last couple weeks. And last week we looked at one of my favorite stories, and it's when Jesus healed the man at the pool of Bethesda. But this morning we're going to look at one of, in my opinion, is one of the most fascinating recorded miracles for a few reasons. And mainly the process is one thing. The process of how it gets there is a little weird. But regardless, in the end, a man born blind can see. And so John chapter 9, beginning in verse 1, it says, as Jesus was walking along, he saw a man who had been blind from birth. Rabbi, his disciples asked him, why was this man born blind? Was it because of his own sins or his parents' sins? It was not because of his sins or his parents' sins, Jesus answered. This happened so that the power of God could be seen in him. We must quickly carry out the task assigned us by the one who sent us. The night is coming and no one can work. But while I am here in the world, I am the light of the world. And then he spit on the ground and made mud with his saliva and spread the mud over the blind man's eyes. And he told him to go wash yourself in the pool of Siloam. So the man went and washed, came back seeing. His neighbors and others who knew him as a blind beggar asked each other, isn't this the man who used to sit and beg? And some said he was, and others said, no, he just looks like him. But the beggar kept saying, yes, I am the same one. And they asked, who healed you? What happened? And he told them, the man they called Jesus made mud and spread it over my eyes and told me to go to the pool of Siloam and wash. So I went and washed, and now I can see. Where is he now, they asked. I don't know, he replied. And then they took the man who had been blind to the Pharisees because it was on the Sabbath, and Jesus had made the mud and healed him on the Sabbath. God does this miraculous, does a miracle, heals a blind man, and they're more concerned about the fact that he made mud on the Sabbath. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. Religious people, church people, I know some of them, can't let God do something because they're too worried about the process that it took to get there. There are four primary types of healing miracles that are repeated in the Gospels. And Jesus made the lame walk, the mute talk, and the blind see, and deaf ears hear. And while all four are amazing in their own right, blindness certainly entails the greatest degree of difficulty because of the complexity of the human eye. But this miracle is the category all by itself. Jesus doesn't just heal a blind man. All of the blind people that he's healed, that we've talked about up until this point, they weren't blind from birth. Something had happened along the way that caused them to be blind. This man had been blind from birth, and he heals him. The significance of that is there's a synaptic connection between the optic nerve and in the visual cortex of the blind man's brain. It's not there. The connection from the eye to the brain is not there. The healing miracle wasn't as simple as correcting astigmatism or healing a scar on the eye or removing a cataract. Jesus had to hardwire the man's brain by creating that pathway that did not exist. Did you know that babies are born legally blind? They can't focus on anything further than 12 inches away. And that's why touch is so critical in those early stages of a baby's life. That's how they interpret the world. After 8 months or so, the visual acuity, color vision, and depth perception is it'll rival anything. At 6 months, they recognize their mother. At 8 to 9 months, they recognize everybody else. if you were to take a patch, though, and you put it over a newborn's eye, and you left that patch there for even just a year of their life, that baby would be blind in that eye for the rest of their life. Even if there is no physical deformity or genetic defect, the reason is that the nerve that would form between the visual cortex and the optic nerve, that part would not form. And so they would be blind. This guy did not have that. He did not have that nerve. He did not have that synapsis. It didn't form. He was born blind. So it wasn't as easy as just touching the guy's eyes and tweaking the lens there. Here, does this look better? Does this look better? A or B? The man was born blind. He would have a conditions that doctors refer to as irreversible. The natural window of opportunity had closed. And when the natural window of opportunity closes or appears to be closed, that's when God performs some of the greatest miracles. That's when it happens. This guy, there was no way. It didn't matter. No doctor could fix this guy. Even with modern day medicine, no doctor could fix him. Only God. Only God. Sarah was far beyond the years of childbearing. Yet Isaac was still born. It didn't keep God from opening the supernatural window of opportunity and delivering his promise. Before the natural window was opened for Mary, the Son of God was conceived by the Spirit of God. Sometimes we feel like we've missed the windows of opportunities in our lives or missed the window of our miracles. We're too old or too young. I've done too much. I've went too far. I've seen all the doctors, all the specialists with no change. My marriage ended in divorce. I'm not sure I can love or trust ever again. I keep failing in the same area of my life time and time again. Regardless of your situation or circumstance, God can create a new pathway or repair an old one. He's the God of second and third and fourth and thousandth chances. I'm so thankful for that. This man was born blind with an impossible situation to onlookers from birth. It wasn't just like, oh, one day he was playing and got shot in the eye with a BB. Right? Shoot your eye out. He was born blind. He was born blind. It's never too little. It's never too late. When Jesus is involved, impossible is not an option. Verse 2 says, Rabbi, his disciples ask him, why was this man born blind? Was it because of his own sins or his parents' sins? Or if it was not because of his, and Jesus says, it was not because of his sins or his parents' sin. This happened so the power of God could be seen in him. The disciples asked the questions that we ask when something bad happens, right? It's funny when something bad happens in our life, we want to know, it's got to be something we did wrong, right? We must have missed God somewhere. God told us to do something we didn't do, or we're doing something that we're not supposed to do. Something bad's happening, so something's wrong, right? Why has this happened? When stuff gets bad, you know, we examine ourselves. What have I done? Have I done anything I shouldn't have done? That's what I do. Y'all might be more spiritual than that. I'm looking for the cause. The disciples were looking for a cause to the problem. Why was this man born blind? Was it because of sin? No. Jesus says this is so that the power of God could be seen in him. We've been saying it from the very beginning. Everyone wants to see a miracle, but no one wants to be in a situation that necessitates one. Everyone wants to see the miracle, but they want to see it from afar. They don't want to be the one that the miracle is involved in, because in order to see a miracle, we have to get to a point that necessitates a miracle. There has to be a problem. A problem is the prerequisite of a miracle. We don't want that problem. We want our neighbor to have the problem and God to move in their life. So we get to see the miracle, but we didn't have to experience the problem. We want the dessert without having to eat real food. Like every kid. We want the solution. We don't want the problem. But more than a miracle, more than a miracle, I want to see God glorified. I want to see Him glorified. However He chooses to do that, whether by healing or by fixing the problem, helping me to the point, I want to see people pointed to Him because He's being glorified. Sometimes we think that if we are in the will of God, nothing bad will happen, that only good things will happen. But that's completely false. Hebrews 11:32 says, "How much more do I need to say? It would take too long to account the stories of faith of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and all the prophets. By faith, these people overthrew kingdoms, ruled with justice, and received what God had promised them. They shut the mouths of lions and quenched the flames of fire and escaped death by the edge of the sword. Their weakness was turned to strength. They became strong in battle and put whole armies to flight. Women received their loved ones back from death, but others were tortured, refusing to turn from God in order to be set free. They placed their hope in a better life after the resurrection. Some were jeered at and their backs were cut open with whips. Others were chained in prison. Some died by stoning. Some were sawed in half and others were killed with swords. Some went about wearing skins of sheep and goats, destitute and oppressed and mistreated. They were too good for this world, wandering over deserts and mountains, hiding in caves and holes in the ground. They were in the will of God, yet bad things still happened. They were serving Him, yet bad things still happened." The will of God isn't safe. It's not safe at all, in fact. It might even get you killed. But if God gets the glory and the goal is accomplished, then the eternal reward we received will be well worth any sacrifices we make. While the Bible reveals very little about the parents of this man that was born blind, it's not hard to imagine the bitter disappointment discovering that their son would never see. He'd never see them with his physical eyes. It had to have been devastating. God heals him. Jesus heals his eyes. He's able to see. And his parents, though, they threw him under the bus. You read the rest of that story. They're getting questioned by the high priest of what happened. And they're like, well, he's old enough to answer that. Because they were afraid that if they admitted that Jesus healed their blind son, that they would be excommunicated from the church. What in the world? So they just throw him under the bus. He can account for himself. He can answer this on his own. "I'm glad you can see us, son. Good luck." And they ask him, he's like, "Didn't I already tell you this? Didn't I already answer this?" I'm sure that they were devastated, though, when they found out their son would not be able to see them. I'm sure they had unanswered questions that haunted them and kept them up at night. We all have those unanswered questions even today. Why do believers die? Why do good people get cancer? Why do believers get cancer? Why do believers have marital problems? Why are babies born blind? Why are children injured and killed? You should have been here last week. We talked about that. I actually talked about you last week. However, we can't allow the questions that we can't answer keep us from trusting what we know to be true. God is good all the time. Corrie Ten Boom says, there is no pit too deep that God's grace isn't deeper still. God still can get glory, even when it looks bad to us. What are you focused on? The good, the positive, what God has done, or the negative? What are you focused on? It's easy to get focused on the negative. It's easy to focus our energy and our thoughts on the negative because it's in our face so much sometimes. And instead of focusing on what God has done, instead of focusing on how God has changed the situation, we get focused on the negative of the situation. Things are bad. Things are bad. Half the people didn't show up today. Wonder what happened. What's going on? What's going on in their life? They haven't been here in a couple weeks. Something bad must have happened. I wonder if I did something to make them mad. These are the thoughts that I go through every Sunday when I look out there and you're not here. And there are people that are not here today that I know where they are. But there are other people that are not here today that I don't know where they are. And I wonder. And when you don't come for a couple weeks, I wonder what happened. And you know, the thing is I could ask someone who hasn't been here what happened. And you know what? They won't tell me. And so how I find out what happened and why they're mad is someone else tells me 3 months later. If I do something to hurt you or upset you, please just tell me. I have big shoulders. I promise you won't hurt my feelings. I won't be mad. And I will try to fix it. If you have a critical eye, you'll find something wrong with every situation and everything. And that's exactly what the Pharisees did. They were so focused on the law that they couldn't see past it. And Jesus called them out on it. It wasn't just the Pharisees, though. This guy comes back and the people are like, oh, wasn't that the blind beggar? Yeah, how did you get healed? Well, Jesus made some mud and put it on my eyes. Oh, we got to take him to the priest. I can see. I don't want to go over there. I don't care how he did it. Nope, he made mud. It's on the Sabbath. Can't do it. Can't do it. It's against the law. We can't do that. You can't make mud. He spit on the ground and made mud with his spit and put it on his guy's eye. John 9:39, though, Jesus says, he's talking to the blind man. He told him, he says, I entered this world to render judgment, to give sight to the blind, and to show those who think they can see that they are blind. The irony of this miracle is that the man born blind ends up with sight and the seeing, not just the sight. And the Pharisees end up legally blind because they're blinded by the law. And the law says you can't make mud. And they can't see what is happening in front of them. And this man says, I do believe that you are the Messiah. The faith isn't just a way of living. Faith is also a way of seeing. Seeing is believing, but believing is seeing. Do you believe that God can perform miracles? Right before performing this miracle, Jesus reveals one of the dimensions of his true identity, and he said, I am the light of the world. The Pharisees balked at this claim. How can he say that about himself? How can he bear witness of himself? After pronouncing, I am the light of the world, he spit on the ground, made mud with his spit, and anointed it on that man's eye. And scholars have argued the question for 2 millennia, why does Jesus spit to make mud? Adam. It was handy. It was there. But in Greco-Roman world, in the Greco-Roman world, saliva was associated with magical powers. So the Pharisees would have had a negative reaction to this immediately. Plus, it was illegal to make mud on the Sabbath according to the law of Moses. So not only was he making mud, but he was spitting, and spit is magical. I have a lot of things I could go here, but I won't. I think, you know, I have to believe that Jesus did some of the things he did just to push their buttons. I mean, obviously we don't know his motivation, but I'm telling you, it was to push their buttons. Jesus doesn't seem to be asserting his general Genesis power. He originally formed man from the dust of the earth in Genesis, and now he spits on the dust and makes mud to make blind eyes see. The one who created everything in the first place is the one who can recreate anything in the second place. And there's nothing that God can't do. He can do anything. We still have to do our part. If we need a miracle, we're going to do our part. Jesus performs this one, and it comes with a set of instructions. He puts the mud on the man's eye, and then he tells him to do what? Go to the pool and wash. The pool of Siloam. The pool of scent. We don't know this exact distance we have to travel to get there. But I would say it was a hike. And how could this guy get there by himself? He's blind. Did Jesus forget that this guy was blind when he told him to go to the pool and wash? Think about that. Here, let me put some mud on your eyes. Now go to the pool and wash. Oh, thanks. Are you going to leave me there? He has this moment, and in order to get to this pool, he would have had to descend down hundreds of steps. And he's blind. And this miracle happens during the Feast of Tabernacles. So they would have bumped into tens of thousands of people that were there. So why would Jesus send this blind man on a scavenger hunt? Why not just heal him on the spot? Why did he have to go to the Pool of Siloam? It seems unnecessary. I recently heard a story. It was told by Episcopal bishop named William Frey. And as a young man, he volunteered to tutor a student who had lost his sight at the age of 13 through a chemical explosion. He felt like his life was over, and the only thing greater than his self-pity was his hatred towards God. And for six months after the accident, all he did was feel sorry for himself. And then one day his father said, "John, winter is coming and the storm windows need to be up. That's your job. I want them hung by the time I get back this evening, or else." Then he pretended to walk out of the room, slamming the door. John got good and angry. In fact, he was so angry that he decided to do it. He thought, "When I fall, and they'll have a blind and a paralyzed son." But John didn't fall. He discovered that he was capable of doing far more than he realized, even with blinded eyes. Only after completing the job did he discover that his dad was never more than 5 feet away. He made sure that his son was safe, but he knew that helplessness was far worse than the curse of blindness. Even though I can't be sure why Jesus sent the blind man to the pool, I'm guessing that he had lived a relatively helpless life. He had depended on everybody for everything. So Jesus didn't just heal his blindness. He restored his dignity by rebuking helplessness. He said, "You go and you wash." Did someone help him get there? I'm sure someone helped him get to the pool. But I bet he washed himself. I bet he got the mud off his eyes himself. Verse 7 says, "He told him, 'Go wash yourself in the pool of Siloam.' So the man went and washed and came back seeing." What if he had not went and washed? What if he would have just said, I can't do it. Can't get there. I can't make it. I can't see. I'll never make it there. I'll fall down the stairs. They'll never be able to get through this crowd. And he just sat down and took the mud off of his face with anger. What if he wouldn't have done it? I don't think the miracle would have happened. Because most miracles require an active blind audience, if you will. You can't manufacture miracles, but you can wash at the pool of Siloam. One step of obedience can open your eyes. One step of obedience can reverse the curse. In one step of obedience, you can become begin a new chapter in your life. All you have to do is take that first step. I think about Naaman. He comes in 2 Kings chapter 5. He goes to Elisha, and Elisha tells him to go and wash in the Jordan River. And Naaman, it says in verse 11, Naaman became angry and stalked away. I thought he would certainly come out and meet me. I expected him to wave his hands over me in the leprosy and call the name of the Lord as God and heal me. Aren't the rivers in Damascus, aren't they better than any river in Israel? Why shouldn't I wash in them and be healed? So Naaman turned and went away in rage. But his officers tried to reason with him and said, if the prophet had told you to do something very difficult, wouldn't you have done it? So you should certainly obey him when he says, simply go and wash and be cured. So Naaman went to the Jordan River and dipped himself 7 times as the man of God had instructed, and his skin became as healthy as the skin of a young child, and he was healed. Naaman almost missed his miracle because of him not wanting to take the first step. He wanted a wand to be waved. He wanted to be healed instantly. He didn't want to have to put any work in. And he almost allowed an offense to keep him from healing, because he was offended that that's the way that it happened. He was offended that Elisha didn't even come out to see him. He was offended that Elisha didn't come out and lay his hands on him and call on the name of the Lord. He was offended that the wand wasn't waved. He was offended because the water was dirty. It didn't come out. He didn't come out. So what's wrong with this? I'm not going to dip in this river. But if he had told him to do something hard, he would have done it. He took the step and was healed. Verse 7, he said he told him to go and wash. Go and wash in the pool of Siloam. So the man went and washed and came back seeing. We can't manufacture miracles, but we can wash in the pool. We can't manufacture healings, but we can wash in the pool. It takes the first step, though. It takes a step of obedience. And one step of obedience can open your eyes. And one step of obedience can reverse the curse. One step of obedience can begin a new chapter in your life. One step of obedience can change everything. And the man took the step and got his miracle. Sometimes it's taking that step that we need to do. What step do you need to take this morning? What step is keeping you away from the miracle? Will you take it? This guy could have sat there in his self-pity and said, he knew I was blind. I didn't ask for this. I'm not going to wash the pool. I was born this way. I'll die this way. But instead, he took a step. Because Jesus said, if you'll go wash in the pool, you'll be healed. And sometimes it's taking that step of obedience that changes everything. Ask everyone that would to stand to your feet. heard a story about a guy. He's a pastor at a church, and they had a hole in their roof and a hole in the floor. And they had $400. And he prayed and asked God what he needed to fix, the hole in the roof or the hole in the floor. And God told him to take the $400 and give it to missions. And he said, God, I don't know if you heard me. There's a hole in the roof and a hole in the floor. And we only have $400. Which of those do you want me to fix? He told him to send it to missions. So he sent that $400 to missions. And within the next week and a half, money came in to fix the hole in the roof and the hole in the floor. And people came and fixed the hole in the roof and the hole in the floor. I don't know what you're dealing with today, but sometimes it's about being obedient in that first step. Whether it's giving, whether it's praying, whether it's just taking that first step to come to the altar. What is the step of obedience that needs to be done? Lord, I thank you for today. I thank you for what you're doing in this house. I thank you for touching. I thank you for healing. I thank you for miracles that happen. And Lord, I just pray that you just begin to move in this house. I pray that you begin to touch lives. That you begin to change situations and circumstances. Lord, there are people in this room that need miracles in their lives. Some of them are financial miracles. Some of them are physical miracles. Some of them need a miracle in their family. And Lord, I pray that today that you help them to see that first step, whatever it may be. And that you help them to take it, God. That you help them to take it. Maybe God's already been dealing with you about the step, whatever that first step is. And you need strength this morning. I want to invite you to come. I want to pray with you. You need a miracle, and you don't know what that first step is. I want to invite you to come. I want to pray with you. I want to believe with you. It doesn't matter what the miracle that you need is. We've been talking about miracles for months, and some of you have come, and some of you have not come. And it's okay. God is still in the business of changing things. Maybe he didn't do it the first time. Maybe he'll do it today. But you got to give him an opportunity. You need a miracle. And you don't know what that first step is. I want to invite you to come. Maybe you know what the first step is, but you're struggling on whether or not to take it. I want to invite you to come. I want to pray with you. I want to believe with you today. Lord, I just thank you for the ones that came. Lord, I know that you're moving in this house, and you have been moving. Lord, I just pray that you begin to touch hearts and lives today, God. Lord, I pray that if there's ones that need to be here today, Lord, that need a miracle, Lord, I pray that you begin to show them today what it is that you would have them to do. Help us to be obedient, God. Help us to be a house of obedience. If you feel led to come and pray around this altar, feel free to do so. If you feel led to come and pray for the ones that are here, feel free to do so.